If you'd like to receive this podcast early and without ads, consider becoming a member of the DSR Network. Listeners to this show can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience and early access, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our episodes via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for select podcasts, and an invitation to join the DSR Slack community. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code DSRDAILY at checkout to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code DSRDAILY. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, March 23rd, so act now. And thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the DSR Daily. I'm one of your co-hosts, David Rothkopf, and I am joined today by the inimitable Riley Fessler. How are you doing today, Riley?
Not too bad.
Our other buddy, Chris Kottner, is away today and tomorrow, so we're going to have to do this on our own. So you talk about a few stories that are on your mind in the world, Riley, and I'll see if I have any reaction to them.
Well, in Washington, congressional leaders have revealed a $1.1 trillion bipartisan spending bill aimed at defense, homeland security, and various other programs with the aim of preventing a partial government shutdown. The Republican-led House is set to vote on this package on Friday, which would give the Senate only a few hours to approve it. So it's possible there is a brief shutdown unless there is an extension. So the agreement has kind of been described as a compromise by both parties' negotiators, with both also kind of claiming victories on this. It includes increases in defense and border security spending, which of course Republicans have championed. And then it also includes Democratic efforts to kind of block some cuts and other policy measures, which the Democrats are happy about. So seems like it has a good chance of passing. It will, of course, still need some Democrats to vote along with the Republicans, given that there is still expected to be kind of defections from the hardliners. So we'll see what happens.
This is good news because the government will keep going. This is bad news because it's a sign of the continuing, complete, and utter dysfunction of the United States Congress. This is not the way this is supposed to go. Putting together a budget is supposed to be one of their main jobs. It's what they get paid for. But everything has become such a partisan food fight. Everything is about brinksmanship. And we end up in this lunacy. But I will point out, and at the risk of being accused of partisanship, that this is primarily a Republican tactic. And indeed, the only major government shutdowns we have ever seen have been when there has been a Republican House of Representatives. And that is why we have gone through all of this, why millions of federal workers have been unsure of, you know, their daily income and what they'd be doing, why big risk to the country in terms of the eyes of financial markets have been, you know, raised unnecessarily. And it'll be good to have it behind us until it happens again.
So in other news, the Prime Minister of Ireland, Leo Varadkar, has actually announced his resignation, which came as a big surprise to many. His party, Fine Gael, has really struggled in the polls and has kind of had its support flatline in recent months, despite his efforts, including significant constitutional reforms and navigating post-Brexit challenges. The party has just kind of continued to see its popularity diminish. His resignation is effective immediately as party leader, but he will continue as prime minister until successor is chosen before Easter. And again, this is a big surprise. I mean, he just had a meeting with President Biden. He has seen a lot of recent international engagement. But, you know, the challenges for the party were kind of insurmountable. He's not the only politician who is either resigning or has announced that they will not run again from Fine Gael. So a big change for the country. We'll see who his replacement is. There's not really a clear indication yet, given that this was such a big surprise, but something to keep an eye on.
Yep, no doubt. I'm sure I blame Kate Middleton. After all, Ireland's right next to the United Kingdom, and every story that is in that part of the world has to be related to Kate Middleton and her photoshopping and her disappearance. Okay, maybe no story. Maybe it would be better if I hadn't brought it up. But if I hadn't brought it up, people would think we're not paying attention. Because you don't bring up Kate Middleton in these stories. Yeah, Riley, I don't even know why, I don't know why you're not concerned with the big stories of the day.
I know. It's hard to analyze, the discrepancies in the photos in a podcast, but maybe we should be giving more of a detailed breakdown every day.
Maybe we'll do a new podcast called Kate Middleton Watch. Look, this is the kind of thing that happens in countries. This is democracy and politics at work, and this guy was pretty well liked in Washington, was just here last week, and that doesn't matter. What matters is what the politics is at home, and Ireland has been a good, stable, growing country for a long time, one can expect that its political system will work and produce another capable leader.
Well, Secretary of State Antony Blinken is set to arrive in Israel tomorrow, which is going to be in an effort to kind of speak with Israeli leadership about the release of hostages and how to facilitate that. As talks continue to falter, and as both sides have kind of said that they are expecting this to extend for weeks. And the central problem here is that there's just a big disconnect in terms of what each side wants, and there seems to have been little in the way of actually bridging that gap. Israel insists on continuing the war until Hamas is completely dismantled, while Hamas is seeking a permanent ceasefire in exchange for releasing all their hostages. And of course, the other looming issue is this potential assault on Rafah, which would likely derail negotiations. And again, the stakes are high. The humanitarian crisis is getting worse. The efforts to provide aid have certainly increased, but it is not enough to completely avoid the possible famine as well as help the over a million displaced people. So hopefully Secretary of State Blinken's visit can kind of aid this process. It seems like there's still a lot of work to be done, but I'm hoping his visit can kind of make some progress.
Yeah, I have an article today in Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, covers the issue of the famine. And I spoke to a number of experts, including some that have been on our podcast, like former USAID administrator Gail Smith and Refugees International president Jeremy Kneindike. And I have to say, if you care about anybody, if you have a shred of human decency, then you want to see the fighting stopped right now. Because this famine crisis is the worst we've seen in this century. It affects, as Secretary Blinken pointed out, everybody in Gaza. There are a million for whom famine is imminent. But as Jeremy Kneindike points out, when an international organization that tracks these things says famine is imminent, what they mean is their declaration of famine is imminent, and that requires the famine already to be underway. People are suffering, people are starving, people are dying right now. And thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of people could die if the fighting continues. And yes, Rafah is a serious issue, and if Israel goes into Rafah in the way that it intends to, and Prime Minister Netanyahu has said, despite repeated, entreaties from the U.S. not to, that that's what he's going to do, then the casualties could be very high. But so long as the fighting is going on, it's going to be impossible to provide these people with the food and the water and the medical help that they need. And honestly, it would be ghastly. But I also think the consequences for Israel and for Israel's standing will be worse than anything Hamas could dream of doing to the country.
So looking to Ukraine, Russia launched a coordinated missile strike on Kyiv, deploying 31 ballistic and cruise missiles. which marked the first assault on the capital in 6 weeks. Ukrainian air defenses luckily successfully intercepted all of the missiles, but nonetheless, the falling debris injured 13 people and still resulted in fires and damage to buildings and other vehicles. And the attack followed threats by Putin, saying this would come in response to Ukrainian aerial assaults on Russia's Belgorod region. And again, this highlights the need from Ukraine for additional air defense systems to protect from such attacks. And, you know, although they managed to intercept all 31 missiles this time, certainly I think this is not the last attack on Kyiv, and just one missile landing would be disastrous. So again, this aid is necessary. We've talked about it relentlessly on this show, but it is still the case, sadly.
Yeah, well, and you know, you see no urgency on the part of the people in the United States Congress, the Republicans in the Congress, Mike Johnson acting at the behest of Donald Trump to do anything about this. And you don't see a lot of coverage on the news about it. You know, it's not an urgent story here. We had hoped to do a humanitarian look at Ukraine yesterday. I got a little ill in the belly. I'm better. Don't worry about that. But it was like food poisoning or something. But we'll do it next week because, you know, suffering continues in Ukraine, too. These people are fighting not just for themselves, but for democracy and for security in Europe. We're letting them down. We've been letting them down for months. And if we continue to let them down, they're going to lose. And we're going to lose. And the world is going to be much less safe. And once again, political posturing in the United States from people who don't care about long-term consequences can produce disastrous consequences. And we're watching it happen in slow motion. This is a slow motion strategic defeat for the West underway because of Donald Trump. Not any other reason. Not any other reason. And, It's absurd, the situation that we're in now. And frankly, I couldn't imagine it happening as much as a couple of years ago. But that's where we are right now.
Well, despite the resignation of the Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry, which came in response to demands from armed groups who had demanded his resignation, there is still very little progress on the proposed transitional council that was being demanded. So far, not even any names have been put forward as potential members of this council. And this just highlights the continued crisis there. It has led to widespread insecurity and humanitarian crises, including a potential famine and collapse of public services. The international community is, of course, applying some pressure here, but it seems like it is not enough to stem the problem. It has resulted in the evacuation of foreign nationals and calls for united efforts to kind of establish a transitional council, since it seems like the progress is lacking. The World Food Program has also said that they're struggling to distribute aid due to roadblocks. So this potential famine is certainly something to keep an eye on. It is unfortunately yet another place where famine is just on the horizon, and it's another place where the solution seems to be just out of reach. So again, another situation to keep an eye on.
When the people of Haiti have a functioning government, most of the people of Haiti live in poverty and struggle. But Haiti has descended into anarchy. And when Haiti descends into anarchy, there are all those risks that you talked about. And also, Haitians decide to get into boats and come to the United States and go to other places because it's not possible to live there any longer. And the response of the world is to pull out their local citizens and to make statements, but not to actually do much until the crisis reaches a critical stage. We should worry about that happening here because progress has been so slow and it has been prioritized by exactly nobody.
So finally, in a kind of an interesting poll from Reuters and Ipsos that has really told us what we kind of already knew, which is the Republican Party in the United States, has undergone a significant transformation characterized by a shift in its demographics and policy views.
You mean the shift from Abraham Lincoln to Donald Trump, yeah, that shift?
Which, I mean, you know, I guess this is news, but it's not really, because we already, I mean, this is something you could see with your own eyes, the fact that it has moved away from the traditional country club Republican profile to include a base that has a larger portion of working class voters that show more populist tendencies, including, you know, a shift towards more isolationist skepticism of globalization, distrust of the electoral process. And again, this is just stuff that was all reflected in the rhetoric of the party and its base. So it's not really surprising. I don't know that we needed a poll to tell us this.
Let's not dress it up. You know, the article dresses it up. Like, they say, well, this is populism. No, it's not. This is racism. This is xenophobia. This is class warfare. And by the way this class warfare works is that the rich donors of the Republican Party, who want a weak federal government so that they are taxed as at a lower level as possible and there's as little regulation as possible, have figured out a formula to mobilize an army of people who are disenfranchised and to tap into their fears and their anger and utilize that to create a political movement that gives them the kind of power that lets them appoint the judges and put the people into Congress that do nothing except lower taxes and remove regulation that benefit the very, very wealthy. It's a scam. These people are being exploited. And right now it has American democracy at risk of disappearing after 250 years. So this is not populism, and this is not, you know, Republican views versus Democrat views, and this is not politics as usual. This is an extraordinary perversion of our political process and an exploitation of its weaknesses by a handful of super empowered people harnessing the ignorance of tens of millions in a way that could change the course of history in the United States and around the world. So, you know, let's not dress it up in the language of political polls. Let's see it for what it is. That's our rundown of stories for today. You did a great job, as usual, Riley. And we'll do this again tomorrow. And of course, we've got our usual lineup of podcasts, including one looking at a whole variety of the unfolding legal issues that are affecting Donald Trump with one of our favorite folks who is an observer on that and a member of the Sisters-in-Law podcast, Kimberly Atkins-Store. And of course, you're going to get some We're All Going to Die radio tomorrow, looking at some really critical and kind of frightening defense issues. And of course, you've got the Daily Blast each and every day. What's the latest Daily Blast, Riley?
So the latest Daily Blast, Greg talks to Marilyn Lanz, who is running for a state House seat in an Alabama special election set for March 26th. So it's a good one. It talks a lot about the abortion issue and how that's going to affect that race.
Interesting. Greg's doing a great job sort of getting out there and getting ground level takes on what's going on in American politics. We're going to keep trying to do that for you too. So join us for all this and come back here tomorrow for more of this. And we'll try to keep an eye out to what's going on in the world. Until then, bye-bye.